So those of you that are here last week will remember that Arya Sheila kind of introduced the theme of the 10 precepts. So this week I'm starting with the first precept. So there's lots of suttas, lots of places in the Pali canon where the Buddha talked about the precepts. I found one called the Abhisanda Sutta, which is translates as rewards. And I thought that was interesting. So I'll just read you a bit of it. Monks, there are these 8 rewards of merit, rewards of skillfulness, nourishments of happiness, celestial, resulting in happiness, leading to heaven, leading to what is desirable, pleasurable, and appealing to welfare and happiness. Which 8? There is the case where a disciple of the Noble Ones has gone to the Buddha for refuge. This is the first reward of merit. Reward of skillfulness, nourishment of happiness, celestial, resulting in happiness, leading to heaven, leading to what is desirable, pleasurable, and appealing to welfare and to happiness. So going for refuge to the Buddha. Furthermore, the disciple of the Noble Ones has gone to the Dharma for refuge. This is the second reward of merit, reward of skillfulness, etc. Furthermore, the disciple of the Noble Ones has gone to the Sangha for refuge. This is the third reward of merit, reward of skillfulness, nourishment, of happiness, etc. Now there are these 5 gifts, 5 great gifts. Original, long-standing, traditional, ancient, unadulterated from the beginning, that are not open to suspicion, will never be open to suspicion, and are unfaulted by knowledgeable contemplatives and Brahmins. Which 5? There is the case where a disciple of the Noble Ones, abandoning the taking of life, abstains from taking life. In doing so, he gives freedom from danger, freedom from animosity, freedom from oppression to limitless numbers of beings. In giving freedom from danger, freedom from animosity, freedom from oppression to limitless numbers of beings, he gains a share in limitless freedom from danger, freedom from animosity, and freedom from oppression. This is the first gift, the first great gift, original, long-standing, traditional, ancient, unadulterated from the beginning, that is not open to suspicion, will never be open to suspicion, and is unfaulted by knowledgeable contemplatives and Brahmins. And this is the fourth reward of merit. I shall stop there. So if you, I don't know if you got that, but what the Buddha's saying there is, so the first thing we do is we go for refuge to the 3 jewels. And that's kind of what, that's our baseline in a way. We go for refuge to the Buddha, to the Dharma, and to the Sangha. And then after that, it's a bit like what we chant every Saturday morning, isn't it? It's not just a bit like, it's exactly like. And after that, we get the ethics, the ethical precepts. So the first one is the abstaining from taking life. So in English it's, I undertake the training principle of abstaining from taking life. And in doing so, what the Buddha's saying is we get rewards. So he's saying to start with, we give freedom from oppression to limitless numbers of beings. So those of us who've perhaps been vegetarian for many years, I wonder if we ever think of that, the freedom that we've given to limitless numbers of beings that we haven't eaten, you know, put it crudely. There are those animals out there that we haven't eaten. And in giving that freedom from danger, we gain some element of free, this is what the Buddha is saying, we get an element of freedom from danger, for ourselves, we get some freedom, a sense of freedom. So in abstaining from taking life, we get a level of freedom. So, yeah, I mean, there's many, many ways, many, many places in the Pali Canon, as I said, where these precepts come up. They're just the bedrock, really, of the Buddha's teaching. So that's why we're exploring them, I suppose, in this session, because they are the bedrock of the teachings. And Bhante, I think last week Arya Shila mentioned this book, Ten Pillars of Buddhism, where Bhante talks about the ten precepts quite briefly, really. It's quite a small book. There was something I wanted to read. I can't remember why. Oh, yes. It's here. And we thought, it's not just, I suppose it's not just the Buddha that decided, that kind of discovered. We didn't discover these ethics. They're just there. They're the natural law. They're the natural way that we would operate if we were in tune with ourselves, if we were in tune with our surroundings. That this is how we would be. And Bhante quotes quite a few different sources in this little book. He quotes from the Bodhicharya Avatara, Shantideva's book. He quotes from the Dharmapada, which is one of the earliest Buddhist scriptures. But he also quotes Shelley. I don't know if you know this quote. I think it's really lovely. So this is Shelley. I don't know if he lived such an ethical life, really. I think he was a bit saucy, wasn't he? But he might have been good at this bit of it. See, the greatest secret of morals is love, or a going out of our own nature, an identification of ourselves with the beautiful, which exists in thought, action, or person not our own. A man to be greatly good must imagine intensely and comprehensively. He must put himself in the place of another and of many others. The pains and pleasures of his species must become his own. So that's Shelley talking about the metta-bhavana, really, isn't he? So I was just wondering if we thought about the precept of not killing. You know, that's probably none of us have killed a human being. You know, we're not right at the best. So if the door is one end of the spectrum where you might have killed a human being, and the shrine is, I suppose, the perfection of this precept of non-harm, I wonder where we put ourselves, you know, just imaginatively, where we put ourselves up near Dira or down near Rowena, or, you know, I don't eat meat and fish, but do I sometimes swat a fly? You know, do I put slug pellet out for the slugs? You know, just sort of thinking about it. Where are you? Where would you perhaps like to be if you want to shift a bit? You know, could I shift a bit more? That's just the basis of not killing something, isn't it? But this precept has so much more than that. It's a positive form of the precept of deeds of loving kindness, which goes on sort of infinitely, really, doesn't it? You know, that's about opening the heart. When we were, before we started the class this morning, we meet in a little team meeting, and people report in. And what I was thinking, what people were saying as they were reporting in, could be the whole of this talk this morning, you know? I mean, Inga came on the bus. Mm,
did, yes.
Yeah. Why don't you tell us?
But I really have to go back to last night. Okay. Not only this morning, very briefly. I'm very delighted that my friend Kay is ordained and she has got a new name, Moksha Darshini. I got a new name last night, not as important as a case. When I got home last night, my husband said, "Hello, Ginger Rogers." Because last night we created Sangha. Six of us here from the Buddhist Center, we went dancing, five rhythms. And with my medical condition, it was a bit stupid. But the evening, it was fundraising for the refugees. So I thought I'll go along, especially since I've never tried five rhythms. But I only stayed for an hour. I really couldn't do any longer. But for that hour, I did enjoy myself. And when I woke up this morning, I thought, oh, my goodness. And I thought, I don't want to meditate. I really don't. I feel so achy all over. So I thought, what do I do? I'll come in on the bus and I'll meditate on the bus. I'll be very mindful, not read. Normally I read so that the time goes quickly. So I'll be very, very mindful. So a couple of people got on, but not before they got on. Me being mindful, my mind wanders. What am I going to cook for dinner tonight? And then I'll go back to what's happening outside. A couple of people got on with an awful lot of luggage, like more than they really could carry. The husband had to sort of lug it in twice. It was fine. A couple of stops later, another lady got in. And I was still being mindful, not talking to anybody here. Yeah? Another lady got in, she sort of sat next to me, and it all started off. She had a bag, and I had two bags for hidden gems. I pushed them aside. I said, there's plenty of room there, put it there. So we started to connect, her and me. Yeah. And then she looked at the people opposite with the luggage, and she said, they are Romanians. I said, how do you know? Well, I recognize the accent. And the guy must have heard it. He said, no, we're not. And I said, well, where do you come from then? And she said, well, you're Russians then. No, we're not. We're from Poland. So, and then I asked them, I said, are you going home, you know, because of all the luggage? They said, no, we are going to a jumble sale to make some money. Yeah, and a few stops later they got off by East Croydon, just before East Croydon, and I just said, I hope you make some money today. And he said, thank you. He said, but afterwards we've got to go to work. So we have made a connection, and I realized, not only with that couple, the woman then started opening up. She said, oh, she said, I'm going to the christening of my grandson, you know. So I realized we are all in the same boat. We all suffer and we all want to be happy. Yeah, and this is, you can make connections on the bus. You don't have to just sit there and say, think, don't talk to me.
Thank you, Inga. Thank you. Yeah, just I just thought there's just so many opportunities, really, isn't there, for practicing the first precept, and opportunities also for not practicing it. You know, for doing the opposite. I suppose I don't know what that other lady's motives were, but it doesn't sound like she felt too friendly towards somebody with a foreign accent. Mm-hmm. You know, but you managed to probably change her attitude in that moment, and that's. That's a big deal, actually. That's a big deal. This is where, you know, we can make changes to ourselves, and we can make changes to other people. So where am I? So we were thinking about the spectrum, and undertaking the training principle. That means that we're not saying you must be good. You know, this. I think we had this book out last week, not about being good. It's so good, actually. It's so good, even though it's not about being good. It's such a good book. I would really recommend it. Subhadra Mati did come here sometime before the summer, I think, and talked about the book. It's got lots of exercises in it, which I like, which I'm going to get you to do in a bit. So I just wanted to talk a little bit about the undertaking of the training principle. I think the wording of that, I mean, it's in the Pali, it's exactly that. I undertake to train myself. So we're not ever saying, I must do this, I mustn't do that. We're saying, this is kind of work, ongoing work, we're training. We're training in that first precept, in undertaking not to take life, in whatever form that is. And also from that we come to the positive precepts of deeds of loving kindness. So this morning Inga, I think, did a deed of loving kindness and made the connection, which is also at the heart of Buddhism, that we're all interconnected, that we're not separate. I came in my car actually, so I'm just separate in my little car thinking, oh, I'm late, I overslept, I'm not prepared, all those things. So I was thinking about myself all the way here. And then I get in the team meeting and Inga tells me that, and Tom told us something else, Mark told us something else, Rune told us, you know, that there we are, we're all connecting. And there I am in amongst a bunch of practitioners. And here we are now in amongst a bunch of practitioners. We're all practicing it at a certain level, hopefully. And training to take it deeper. So I wanted you to do one of these exercises now. So first of all, you don't need your paper first straight away. So this is just sit quietly and be comfortable. And I'm going to read out some thoughts, and you can just spend a little bit of time on each of those thoughts. So bring to mind, as vividly as you can, something mean or unkind that you've done recently. Could be something small, but just think about something you've done that's a bit mean or unkind or thoughtless. If you thought about something, just tune into how that makes you feel in your body physically. And then tune into how it makes you feel about yourself. And then tune into how it makes you feel in relation to the world at large. And then if you're ready, you can open your eyes and just write a few words about each of those
stages, just three or four words. So if you've done that, just closing your eyes again. And now bringing to mind, as vividly as you can, something kind or generous that you've done recently. It doesn't have to be anything big, just something that you can recall. And then tune into how that makes you feel physically. And then how it makes you feel about yourself. And then how it feels, makes you feel in relation to the world at large. And then when you're ready, you can just again write a few words about each of those levels. Anyone want to say anything about anything that they discovered in that exercise?
I used to have a, well, I used to have a card of a Tibetan monk looking out a window, which said, "It's with your mind that you make this world." And I always really liked that card. I was just thinking about this, that I've heard that kind of idea at the beginning of the Dharma project so many times, and I kind of know it. There's something you think affects how you think about things, how you feel about things, the physical state of your body, and kind of how you view the whole world, and see how long it really takes in to stop me kind of poisoning myself, in a sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
What a lot of work that is, that I can still do it. And, although I've heard it so many times, I've read it so many times, I've thought it.
And that the opposite is also true, you know, isn't it? That you know, you find you do something small, and that has an effect too, doesn't it?
Yeah. So even to think well of someone, even if you know, there's kind of, we think about, oh, there's an objective reality. That's a good person. That's not a good person, or whatever. I mean, I don't know if you can say it's objective, but. It's what we do to ourselves to go with a certain view. That doesn't mean to become really gullible or anything. It just means, you know, what kind of attitude we take to things affect our whole experience, of, and then we affect other people.
Well, on the other hand, I don't. If you start classifying things, we'll say for the word good, bad, if you start classifying them that way, you can't shut out bad thoughts. You can't shut out anger and things like that. You have to accept that that is just as much part of you as compassion. And if you try to pretend that it doesn't exist in you, I think you are, that's all you're doing, you're just pretending. I think that you have to accept that there are times when you will get angry with it.
I suppose then what you do with that is that you got angry, you accept that you did that, and then you can sort of mull it over a bit and think, you know, that there's this very well known phrase about that the Buddha said, that anger is like picking up a hot coal and throwing it at somebody. So who does it hurt first? You know, so we know that. Well, even though we're getting angry, you know, we know all that, don't we? But we still, obviously, we still do.
I think equally, whether you can't keep patting yourself on the back and saying how good and kind and compassionate you were, I think that's just as well. I think they're both. If you start clinging to them, to anything, I think that's I think that's the wrong way. You have to experience it and then let it go.
Yeah.
You've got to hold it. Wanting. It's like someone was saying to me, having had a good meditation, and they're going to hold on to that good meditation. It's going to happen again this week, and it's going to happen. And it isn't.
No. Did you want to say something else?
Yeah, I think, you know, what you hear is experience. It's like we're not saying we don't have it. We can't control these thoughts that come up. They're going to come up, but what's the experience? And my experience is often they're painful in and of itself, and you can feel that pain.
Yeah.
That closing down of your body, I can turn it against myself. You don't realize how much you're suffering having those. So that awareness of the experience, and likewise that what you're talking about, the gift and the reward of being skillful. You're just feeling open and light and free. It's just that, those experiences of it. Can't control.
No, it's just good to, like you say, to have to experience the experience,
have it.
Bring awareness to it.
Being curious about it. So what does it feel like to be angry?
And when that other person throws the hot coal at you, you know that it's burnt their fingers.
Well, that's up to that's their issue.
Yeah.
We'll leave that with them.
Deal with our experience.
Let's move on.
The word that came out earlier from anger was connectedness.
Yeah.
And I found the thinking on the first let's call it negative experience, although it was an experience, it was disharmonious and it was disconnecting. Whereas the positive connection, it was warm and it was open and it was connected, and recognizing the connectivity. So it's, there's a sort of contrast between the two.
Yeah, and that's what we want, isn't it, really? What all human beings really want is to connect with others. And sometimes we don't quite know how to do that. So, you know, we've had a little taster there of what of two different sides of things. One of the basic Buddhist teachings of actions having consequences. We had, you know, the act might have been just a thought, but it had consequences, but you know, the first lot and the second lot.
Just like to say that I've often thought that it's okay to have whatever experience you're having, but quite often I invest in saying I'm not the sort of person that, and then it's almost like I'm congratulating myself for habitual ways of responding to all different sorts of experience. And I think that's my difficulty. And so I thought, if I hear myself saying, well, I'm not the sort of person, then I think, well, probably I am the sort of person, you know, and just let it be a little bit more, less about fixing myself as that sort of person.
Mm.
Is there a kind of feeling that we develop through that, though? Is there a learning curve? I notice myself getting angry. And then I think afterwards, oh, I've done that before. I've followed that pattern before. But there's something insightfulness and skillfulness that tells me that I can change that. I may get angry again, but at least I recognise that it is a pattern of conditioning that I can grow from it.
Yes, but we need to, the only way we are going to grow is by being aware, bringing our awareness to it. That's the important thing, isn't it? We do these things, we do them again, but we've brought awareness to them, and the next time we do it, we think, oh yeah, I did this before. I think I've done this before. You know, I have this. I think I've said it more than once in this room that I have this tendency to get a bit angry in my car where there's nobody who can hear me. And, you know, people in this room who've been in my chapter, who I've confessed to, sort of, I don't quite swear, but I'm quite competitive. I have been, anyway. I'm trying to change. I've been quite competitive in my car. Like, not going to let that one in. I'm going to get away from the lights before you, even though you've got a bigger car. And I did it.
Not anymore.
Now I'm going to be a different. I'm trying to be a nice old lady driver. So, you know, I brought awareness to it. I had found ways of trying to change, and I have changed it. Actually, I've changed it. I've kind of drifted into this. Well, I'm not in a hurry. I don't go to work. You know, what's the problem? So, it is possible to change.
It's difficult, though, isn't it?
So let's. I'll move on a bit to. So we had a taster of the negative and the positive there, but I want to move on more to the positive precept, the deeds of loving kindness, and moving into. I suppose we've started it really, moving into empathy. That we are into. We are connected, and one of the things that Bhante brought into as a teaching quite a long time ago, I don't know quite where he found it or whether he actually made it up, was the thing about the love mode and the power mode. I don't know if people are aware of that teaching, where, I mean, this precept is about deeds of loving kindness, so we are trying to operate in the love mode. And if we operate in the power mode, it has to be with the love, kind of the love mode underneath it. So sometimes we might act in power mode to, you know, the classic is to save a child from sticking its fingers in the plug or running across a road or something. Or Rowena was talking earlier about a situation at work where you are in a situation, I suppose, of power. But trying really hard, I thought, to operate in the love mode in a situation in business in these days where it's very hard if you're a manager, which you are, and you're expected to act in the power mode. And I just thought you were doing that really, really well, you know, with somebody who you're trying to train and trying to understand how they operate in order to get them to do the work better. So, you know, I think we can probably all think of situations where we've had to work in the power mode and probably have just, you know, been in power mode because we haven't got time or we're not thinking straight or something. So, but this precept really gives us the teaching of what it is to operate in the love mode, to try and, I suppose, to kind of try and connect with somebody to see where they're coming from. They might be quite different from ourselves. People are, aren't they? But wanting to understand so that then you can connect with someone. There's a lovely little quote from one of the early scriptures that Bhante has in here, which I really like. This is one of the early sayings of the Buddha's, and it's very commonly from the Itavisika. It's very commonly used. Monks, whatever grounds there be for good works undertaken with a view to rebirth, all of them are not worth 1/16th part of that goodwill, i.e. metta, which is the heart's release. Goodwill alone, which is the heart's release, shines and burns and flashes forth, surpassing. Just as, monks, the radiance of all the starry bodies is not worth 1/16th part of the moon's radiance, but the moon's radiance shines and burns and flashes forth, even so, monks, goodwill, that is metta, which is the heart's release, goodwill alone, which is the heart's release, shines and burns and flashes forth, surpassing them. Surpassing goodwill, but undertaken with a view to rebirth. So the Buddha was talking there because the tradition was that people did good things from a perspective of wanting a good rebirth, which is probably not so much a motivation for us in the West in these days. But so we do it for something else, maybe to get something back, probably, a lot of the time. So the love mode. I'd like you to do another exercise now, which is one of imaginative identification. So this is about empathy. So have a little, shut your eyes for a bit. This is a good one, actually. It's one that I did when I was, must believe, 25 years ago, when I was living with my children. So in your life, imagine, bring to mind someone in your life that annoys you. Maybe someone that you live with, someone that you work with. You know, not just someone that does have an annoying habit, not someone you absolutely can't stand, but you know, you live with them or you work with them or you see them lots and they annoy you. So sometimes we think that they're annoying us on purpose, don't we? They're doing it just to annoy us. So in this exercise, I want you to really get into their shoes. And really see the world from their perspective. and in their shoes, looking out from their eyes, in their mind. Imagine them doing this thing that annoys you, or maybe many things, but you're doing them now, you're that person. So really, really experiencing life from their perspective. How are you feeling as you're doing this thing? So trying as much as you can to be seeing the world from their perspective. How does it feel to be doing this thing? What are you thinking? Try not to let yourself fall back into your own views and judgments, staying with this other person's views. So from their perspective, while you're still in their shoes, just you could write a narrative of how it feels, what you're thinking about when you're doing this thing. Are you getting on with this? I just want to tell you my experience when I did it, because it makes me laugh now. When I was first going along to the London Buddhist Centre, we did this exercise, and I was living with my two children, and
I used to come downstairs in the morning and they'd have Capital Radio on. And I'd just go and turn it off and put Radio 4 on. And this kind of, oh, it's my radio, it's my kitchen. And I put myself in my daughter's shoes and I really did get into it. And it was so revealing. You know, there she was having a breakfast, listening to the music. And then her mum comes in. My mum comes in. Oh, God, she's always in a bad mood when she gets up. She goes straight to the radio. And I was in the middle of that song that I hadn't heard for ages and I really wanted to hear the rest of it. She just turns it to this boring programme that's all about talking and politics. And, you know, and it was just really, it really, I don't know if you found, but I just really saw something, actually. It did really affect me, you know, putting myself in someone else's shoes like that. I think I told her about it as well. Does anyone want to share anything that they've discovered?
An analogy that I came across when I was studying, I think, was psychology of interpersonal behaviour, was that if you think about it, every person you meet is a mirror held up to you. You can't really, I mean, obviously you can imagine about yourself and what kind of person you are, but it's how other people react to you. It's like a reflection. I suppose, obviously, it is possible that some people are just horrible all the time. And it doesn't matter who they are. But if you find in general that you're getting this bad reflection back, you've got to say why. And it's something to do with you're seeing a reflection of yourself. And so that's what... And that would fit in with the idea of empathy.
Getting feedback. Yeah. It's what we all need in the spiritual life, I think, isn't it? Feedback. Anyone? Sorry.
Me?
Who spoke?
Me.
Oh, sorry.
Quiet. It's just the realisation that people, when they're acting in a certain way, doing it out of pain.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Wanting to make a connection in a misguided way.
Yeah.
Or fear.
Fear.
Insecurity. Mm. I could feel my boss's insecurity when I put myself in his position.
Mm. Oh.
Trying to control everything.
Oh.
And it not succeeding.
That's painful, isn't it?
Mm. It's horrible.
You'd be a boss.
I think I realise that I get annoyed with the person because I'm assuming he's doing it with one motive. And then first I was thinking, what other motive would you have? I can't get into this at all. And then I suddenly thought, oh, maybe he's thinking that. And I saw it in a completely different way, and then I didn't feel annoyed because the first motive I was thinking is my boyfriend, he just takes his dressing gown off or something, he just leaves it on the floor, or he shaves and just leaves his razor on the side. And I think he wants me to clear up. He's thinking, she'll clear it up, I don't need to bother. So it really annoyed me. But then I thought, that's not really him at all, because he's really helpful, he's just really washing up and hearing whatever. I think, what on earth else could he think? And I thought, he's always a procrastinator, so he probably thinks, I'll do it later. And that's much more likely. And when I saw it like that, I thought, oh, that's not so annoying. Then and I don't have to do it. And it has really changed my feeling of tolerance for that. I'll just ask him to do it now rather than later, rather than he just wouldn't need to. So that's really helpful.
Anybody else? No? What were you going to say? The neighbour of ours, he sometimes irritates me. He is a very kind person, and he would, if you ask him for help, he would do anything for you. But he does go, he really, really irritates me at times. When he comes home from work, you can hear him already. He starts whistling and singing to make himself heard that he is coming home. And we hold their keys. and many a times he rings the doorbell. Oh, I forgot my keys. I didn't, you know, can I just have his door keys? Because he can't be bothered to take his keys to work.
This is what you're thinking.
No. No, no, he did say.
So what about his perspective?
Yeah, no, when I put myself in his shoes, he just wants to be heard and acknowledged, and he wants to talk to someone.
Oh.
And he feels lonely because he's henpecked.
Oh.
And
so then we need to go back another. What about her?
Yeah, well,
this is a chain, isn't it?
Yeah. And she is a smoker, and he always, every single time we talk to him, he complains about her smoking, you know, and in no uncertain terms. Yes, very difficult.
Well, it's. I mean, you started with the interconnectedness on the bus, and this is an example too.
Yes.
You know, we go back, and I was thinking about the dishcloth. Mm. I have a thing about the dishcloth. Don't leave it on the side all soggy and full of crumbs. Rinse it out and hang it up, otherwise it gets smelly.
Mm.
You know, and why is that? And, you know, it's all fascinating, isn't it? It's all real... kind of curious, if you bring a sense of curiosity to it, it really helps, I think, rather than the habitual. Because if you live with someone for a long time, it's very difficult to change those habitual sort of tutting, sort of, our next door neighbours, you know. These are the little things that we can change, I think, if we can think about deeds of loving kindness and interconnectedness.
You can actually also ask, if you're curious, actually ask people questions.
Like
in this case, you can actually find out, is he a procrastinator, which he might be, or is he something else? Yeah. And you don't necessarily imagine. So instead of sort of thinking, all practice this, why not ask?
Why do you leave the dressing gown on the floor?
Mm.
As long as you ask in the right way.
Yes.
Why have you done that again?
You always, these are the things to avoid.
So I'm not going to buy that doormat that says, oh no, not you again.
No, you're not.
But your neighbour knows that you think he's kind.
Yourself. And when you said he was whistling, I thought,
yes, but
you don't hear much whistling these days.
He is kind, yes.
I like a bit of whistling.
But he knows that you think he's kind. He must know that.
Yeah, probably, yeah. But
so
not
he wants he wants to meet someone who thinks he's kind.
Yeah, not really much.
Yeah. That's a good place to finish, isn't it? You
yeah.
do have to finish now. But we did just decide to just press...